So after skipping an introduction you already seen n times, I'll introduce the matter sector of this extension of the original model in two of its most natural incarnations. And if I should have time also to discuss some possible open issues which might be worth investigating. So I'll briefly review what I mean with detailed balance, and then introduce a scalar field which is minimally coupled. So my matter content will be just a scalar field. And I'll proceed discussing what are the problems related with this model. And talk about also a bit about the cosmology of this model. Then I'll proceed to the minimally coupled case, which has even more problems. So I will skip the first few slides, which you probably know by heart by now. Start with the the action which is by construction invariant under foliation preserving diffeomorphisms. So we have a preferred foliation, and of course the full diffeomorphisms are reduced to time-dependent reparametrizations of time. I will not talk about actually the extra scalar mode, because what I will say will be rather independent from that problem. Now, it will be also independent from whether you use the projectability condition. But for just reasons of simplicity, I'll have in mind the projectable version of the field. Now, with the kinetic term in the presence of a scalar field, will be the following, where the first part is the gravitational part with the extrinsic curvature, and capital phi is related with the time derivative of a small phi, which is my scalar field. And I can write down it in a compound notation by introducing the width metric of matrix extended to lambda not equal to one case, and the usual diagonal metric in the presence of a scalar field, which is basically what you have in a Willard-DeWitt context. And also in introducing as a compact notation these matrices is to say the fields and their conjugate momenta, which are defined as usual once an action is given, then the kinetic term will be of this form. Now, the definition of a total potential of the action will be to a certain extent a matter of taste, and a guiding principle might be in fact a detailed balance. And in that case, one will define a lower dimensional theory, and the total potential will be related to this lower dimensional theory by a functional variation. So it will be basically quadratic in this functional variation. There is a paper by Poulson where he can define a detailed balance for actions which are actually highly nonlinear, but I'll stick to the simplest definition here. So, if we have a scalar field, we will have an extra part which we'll have to compute, and one can also write down the Hamiltonian constraint, which in the case of a projectable theory will be global. But anyway, the integrand or the Hamiltonian constraint will be quadratic. Now, yes.
transparency in the conditional context, as John Zimmerman was pointing out yesterday, the detailed balance condition is associated with a Langevin operation, which means that in that case, the detailed balance actions would be total squares of pi plus the variation of the lower dimensional action, the whole thing squared. In other words, there are cross terms that usually drop out for some good reasons. Would these cross terms also drop out here in the more general setting? If you instead of this Hamiltonian, Hamiltonian, which is pi plus variation of w whole thing squared, would it drop, cross terms drop out? No.
I guess the answer is yes, but they're not positive. So I'm not sure. Okay. Well, the one thing one can notice is that the Hamilton Jacobian formalism is naturally implemented because there is a simple class of solutions wherein the momentum of my matrix field is just given by the variation of the lower dimensional action.
And more explicitly, one would end up with these two sets of equations. However, there is actually an alternative, that is to consider another type of solutions where the gravitational and matter sectors are minimally coupled, are completely decoupled. This is a different definition of what I mean by detailed balance, and in fact, I will have two different theories. To begin with, I will start with a minimal coupling prescription just because it's simpler. But then I'll show you what happens also in the natural case where you consider the variation of a total lower dimensional action. So why to impose detailed balance? Well, because first of all, the definition of a total action does not contain too many terms, and one does have a simple class of solutions, and also one is hoping to experience what sometimes is called quantum inheritance, which is basically the features of the quantum theory will be inherited by the features of a classical theory, and in particular if the lower dimensional theory is renormalizable, then also the total action would be the four-dimensional theory will be renormalizable. And as far as I know, recently it was shown that cosmological massive gravity is indeed renormalizable. Now, so the recipe of this theory is assume an isotropic scaling between time and space coordinates, and a symmetry, which is smaller than a usual diffeomorphism symmetry, and the principle of detailed balance. However, this is not a necessary ingredient, and it turns out to be also one of the most restrictive. So there are some problems with detailed balance. That, for instance, the non-projectable case, the infrared limit is reached above cosmological scales, and we see that the scarce sector is difficult to implement because there are a number of issues at the stake. So the main point is that it might be desirable actually to abandon the principle of detailed balance, and this result was not at all clear at the beginning, and in fact, were many papers where this detailed balance principle was used or not, but with no a priori justification. So, if you wish, once you add a matter sector in your theory, you may tend to argue that detailed balance is actually unviable. Now, in the minimal coupled minimally coupled case, the gravity sector is the one of a topologically massive gravity, and which produces at the level of a 4D action a total potential of this form, where C is the Copland tensor, and so the highest order terms are sixth order in spatial derivative. And where these coefficients alpha are strictly determined by magnitude and sign by the coupling constants of the lower dimensional field. Now, in the infrared, this action reduces to the usual gear action upon a corner redefinition, which I won't show here, and a definition of an effective speed of light and a Newton's constant. And in this case, since lambda should be close to one, the cosmological constant turns out to be a negative definite. And I'll comment on this feature later. Now, the scalar sector will be something similar. So we will need the sixth order spatial derivatives also in the scalar sector, because we are imposing isotropic scaling in all sectors of the theory. And this is a simple ancestor which we can do. And notice that we are forced to introduce this pseudo-differential operator. One could actually add the terms depending on a vector field, but this would generate a very non-trivial and non-minimal scalar vector tensor field. So here the idea is that we just want to limit ourselves to a scalar field and see how far we can go if we have only this matter in the theory. Now, these pseudo-differential operators may horrify some people and make others ecstatic. To me, just here, and there is an extensive literature on the subject, which basically starts from the late 60s. And so to deal with these operators, one has to involve what is commonly known as a fractional calculus, which is actually as old as ordinary calculus. And in fact, it was first developed by Riemann himself and Liouville. And it contains a number of weird properties. It does have concrete applications, even outside physics. For instance, fractional calculus is used in statistics and in the studying of long memory processes, such as weather, in the climate models, and the financial models, and also in system modeling and control in engineering. And by this thing, I mean that, for instance, very complicated electric circuits can be solved by using fractional calculus. So it does have a lot of applications. And there is actually a number of textbooks which treat this branch of calculus. Nonetheless, it is difficult because one should define carefully how to represent the fractional operators, and this of course will affect the results. And for instance, we can look at the initialized calculus, which was developed recently by Lorenzo, and which works at NASA and Harvard. Well, as an example of fractional calculus, one can take the original definition of by Liouville. So for instance, one starts from differentiation of a simple function like x to the k, where n and k are just natural, and extend the result where n and k, which I will now call alpha and beta, are complex numbers. And the most natural extension is just to look at these factorials as gamma functions and actually write down, define the fractional derivative in this way. So amusing thing is that the fraction derivative of the constant is no longer zero. Just set beta equal to zero and alpha, for instance, equal to 1/2. And as far as other operators are concerned, in particular elliptic operators, the composition of these operators in general might not commute unless either alpha or beta is a natural number. And also, other non-trivial features emerge, such as the fact that if you consider the fractional wave equation, you will get a solution which in general will not be a solution of the ordinary wave equation. In particular, you will have a continuous spectrum of massive modes. This was in particular studied recently by Barsi and collaborators. Now, as far as we might be concerned, we have even to go deeper into the subject and try to see what is the functional calculus in the presence of no local operators. In particular, if this elliptic operator, I should be able to define an integration by parts where dots are stand for boundary terms, and this one can certainly do. But also, one has we will compute the functional variation of W, the three-dimensional action. Well, we'll have to deal with the terms like this, and it is not obvious how to define a functional variation of this object which does contain the free method. There is a trick that is which actually has been inspired by another class, large class of no-local models, and consists in writing the no-local operator as an exponential sort of differential operator. So in this case, one can write down the functional variation of this operator as a one-parameter integral, which contains the functional variation of the logarithm. And this can be treated in the context of Borel functional calculus. Fortunately, we will not need to enter into all these details, because the terms which will determine the problems of the model will not depend on basically on this type of terms. And I.
Right. Otherwise, the logarithm is not well defined. You assume that the delta is always different from zero.
Yes, it goes within your definition of elliptic operators. Yeah, so you have to start with a suitable definition of elliptic operators.
But there's another way of doing it. We write as a Milan transform function regularization, and then so that we integral the 1 minus alpha each of this delta 2, and then it will be well defined.
Yeah, so maybe different ways actually to go to the same result. The important thing is that the different definitions, they give different results, but they should all converge to the case where alpha is natural. So if your definition gives something which, of course, does not recover, but the ordinary calculus limits, then there might be a problem. Well. This is why I put quotation marks here, because someone might actually be very interested in working out all these details. I won't have time to do so here.
Now, in the minimal couple case, actually, this functional variation will not be necessary, because the variation with respect to the free metric will pertain on the gravitational sector, where I do not have this type of operator. And at the end of the day, for the scarce sector, I'll obtain the following four-dimensional action, where beta are coefficients which strictly depend from the coefficients of the three-dimensional scalar sector. In the infrared limit, I will get prior absorption of the scalping I will get an ordinary scalar field. And now at this point, I was interested in looking. Yes, sure.
Is the previous slide? So if you hadn't started with detailed balance for matter, what extra terms would you get in S sub 5?
Well, basically, I would get just ordinary differential operators, because there is no a priori reason why I should complicate my life with pseudo differential operators. And I would have these coefficients would be arbitrary.
So you only get the even terms of A equals 2, 4, and 6.
Yes, that's what I would get. What it would not get would be the odd terms.
But see, detailed balance is supposed to be restrictive. So if I have no detailed balance, I should get all these terms.
Okay.
Let me
put it this way.
I have a related question. Maybe you can answer both at the same time. Because once I allow for these fraction derivatives of the Laplace operator to show up in the phi sector, why not allow the same?
That's
in the metric sector.
All right.
Changing the rules and allowing for non-local terms in
the fraction. That's a good question, and I'll partially answer to that in the minimal coupled case where I do have such terms. It's true. In principle, I would expect to find them also in the other set. Here, when it's forced to get to start with a delta to a 3/2 term, just because you want a 6th order term in the total action and the detailed balance. And that's the minimal thing you can ask. But then, of course, you would expect other terms. However, those terms should not affect what I'm going to say now. That can be shown. Now, regarding the restriction of the detailed balance, okay. So, if you start from a four-dimensional action of this form, then the only thing that detailed balance says is that these betas depend on other couplings, and also the sign of these betas will depend from other couplings. Okay. That's the only thing that would restrict. But of course, the question would be, well, why should I add also a delta to the 5/2? Now, regarding the cosmology of this model, at the ground level, there are some trivial effects only when you have an vanishing curvature. And this is the Friedmann equation you have already seen, where a tilde just denotes a rescaling with respect to this lambda dependent factor. And this dark additional term is non zero only when the curvature, this is what we call the kappa, is non-zero. In general, and as you can see here, the negative cosmological constant. Okay. In general, if you have matter, you might have a bounce that will depend on the dynamics of the model. An interesting thing to notice is that if I look for bouncing solutions in vacuum, which is no matter at all, I can find an expression which will depend on all of these coefficients. Now, if I assume detailed balance, all these coefficients conspire to give to forbid a bounce. So the minimum scale factor you would get in that case would be zero. So this is sad because the fact that one could achieve a bounce in vacuum could have been regarded as an added bonus of the theory. However, if you have the state balance, you don't have this bonus. You may regard this as either a problem or not, but nevertheless, it might be kept in mind. Yeah.
Often having balance for no matter at all, so rho is always zero.
Well,
I mean, how is this going to be zero?
It depends actually on the sign of the
You can get a minus sign, for example, for KT.
Yes.
Question. So this property of the bounds is ruled out by the Utah bounds. Would that survive if you break Utah bounds softly just by adding to the total 3+1 action terms which are up to second order?
If you
put the cosmological constant by hand.
If you break it softly, then you will get the bounds also invoking. Because of the combination of these terms would be softly different from zero.
Right.
But you would do that. You would not have a bounds. Depending, if you can, that's a mistake.
So, physical interpretation, right? I mean, for example, if you have matter and at some stage you're so diluted, then the cosmological constant takes over. But what if this k tilde now is negative, right? And you say, I mean, I'm just wondering what, you know, the physics behind that.
Well, if this were a normalizable theory of gravity, you would expect to have some screening from singularities. Now, why this happens when you have an open universe, I cannot answer. And it's an interesting question, but I don't have any sound explanation for that. Well, all right. So the next thing I want to
look at are cosmological linear cosmological perturbations. Either because you are interested in the stability of the scalar field on a curved background, or because you are assuming that this scalar field is the inflaton. And basically, you use the same tools, and you will end up with same problems if you have any. So you might or might not regard this scalar field as the inflaton. If you don't, then you might need another mechanism for inflation, like Robert proposed. However, here I'll just consider the naive idea that the scalar field is the inflaton, and then we see what happens to the scalar spectrum. Now, once one keeps all the second order terms in the four-dimensional action, one gets this result in the UV, where primes denote derivatives with respect to conformal time, and kappa and nu are coupling constants which feature in the 3D theory. Now, in momentum space, one redefines the polarization modes of the graviton, and after including also the infrared term proportional to the Laplacian, one will get the following Mukhanov type equation. And this features a non-standard dispersion relation, which was extensively studied in post-Planckian cosmology by Robert and Jean Martin, and the cyclic permutation of this author. What one obtains is that because of the sign in front of this coefficient is a positive, one will still get a scale invariant spectrum. Now, P is, in this case, is I'm assuming a power law inflation, so the scale factor goes as T to the P. And if I have slow roll, then the spectrum will be almost a scale invariant. And in particular, I will have some smaller spectral index for the tensor sector. Yes? That's correct.
Well, if you want, this is a very, this model is very similar to ordinary inflation. So the only difference is that you have a correction in the UV, which of course will change the normalization of your solution and your amplitude eventually. But still, the slower condition will be what will determine whether you have scaling bias or not. Of course, there are other mechanisms, like considering inflation free bounds or considering another scalar mode, but those are different effects. Nevertheless, one can simply ask, okay, I have a scalar field on a curved background, but let's calculate which point correlation function.
In this case, the fluctuation goes out rising when the upper parameter is lower than the transition scale. Right?
Well,
that's why.
Well, I mean, as a starting inflation, this is precisely the transparent problem. I mean, the
so you consider the K is higher dividend term correction, not the dominant term.
Well,
right.
In the UV, in the scalar sector. You will do something very similar, and for a test field, which is what considering a measured back reaction, you will still get a Mukhanov type equation. The only difference with a full calculation would be that the effective mass term would be more complicated. Still, you will get this correction, which is dominant in the UV. And as you can see, the coefficient is negative. And we cannot do anything about this coefficient if we assume an equal balance. And this is actually turns out to be a strongly dependent scalar spectrum, because what were phases in the other case, in this case, are exponentials, which can practically blow up the spectrum. This is just a formula I got from Robert's paper. So, if you want, this is a concrete realization of a transparent problem, of a transparent model.
Can I ask?
Yes.
So the way to read this is that very, very, when the universe is very, very small, when AFP is very, very small, and the capital is six is dominant, and then everything is exponentially large. Is that the way to read this?
Well, so the idea is that when the upper radius factor is very small, and the upper radius is comparatively small, then you have these will be this case which will exit the horizon first, and these will be the case which are mostly affected by the UV properties. Then these properties will determine the normalization of your solution, and this is just due to the fact that we are looking at nonlinear equations. So the coarse graining and fine graining parts of the theory always talk to each other. I don't know if that answers your question. So apart from the consequence of this cosmological Lipschitz scalar field, nevertheless, this instability can, does suggest that one should abandon detailed balance, because in that case, the sign gets fixed by definition. And the point is that you cannot get at the same time both signs correctly, because it's like trying to straighten a dog's leg. You can then like hours, but you break. So basically it's really an intrinsic feature of this model. Now there are other possibilities to implement the scalar sector, and I mentioned about the minimal coupling, which is actually generalizable, although I won't show you the generalizations. And this will be the three-dimensional action, where, as you can see, there appears a term which has a pseudo-differential operator and a non-minimal coupling between gravity and the scalar. Also, this scalar part will be like the previous one. And again, I
I will assume a quadratic potential, but one can generalize it also to other types of potential. And a minor thing is that the definition of a total action will be defined as minus the other one, just for a technical reason, but this is not important here. Now, the total for the action is ugly and very complicated, and I will not show it here, because one can actually infer some of the properties we are interested in just by looking at a few terms of this action. Now, one can redo the previous calculation and look at the sixth order terms of the perturbation in the tensor and scalar sector. And this is what you will get. So you will get some, well, in the tensor sector, you will get a phi dependent coefficient. In this case, it will be actually constant. And if these coefficients are positive, then you will have no instabilities in either sector. And this condition, of course, will be time dependent because, in general, the scalar field will be dynamic. Now, I can show you the total 4D potential for the scalar field, which is an inverse double well potential. And the fact that it's so one thing I didn't mention is that in the previous model, you could fix the sign in the UV term, but in that case, you would trade the model with another with a potential unbounded from below, which is still undesirable. In this case, by virtue of the different definition of detailed balance, which is by considering also cross terms between metric and the scalar sector, you will get a different potential of this form and a positive cosmological constant. Now, there are still problems in this model. The first is that if you look at the minimum of this potential, this will still be negative. So the ADS vacuum is not lifted. Now, there have been some claims, according to which the fact that we have a negative cosmological constant is a problem. Well, this is not actually true, because as long as I have other fields in my effective theory, in principle, I might be able to lift this ADS vacuum. This is not the case. And so at this point, I can say that the fact that I have an ADS vacuum is a problem. But if you just consider the theory with no matter, then I may perfectly live in such a unit. However, I cannot achieve this result here. It's not obvious from this action. Just believe, take my word. Now, another problem is that the effective speed of light of the scalar mode is positive all near the local maximum. So at some point during the natural evolution of a system, I will have this type of semi-classical instability. Finally, this action defines a peculiar scalar tensor theory, wherein I do not have an Einstein frame. So if one performs a conformal rescaling of a three metric, one will get that different terms will scale differently with respect to the conformal factor. And at the infrared point, one might be able to define a conformal transformation such that the effective speed of light is constant, which is presently a necessary condition to get a viable theory, but only on a very particular background. So it is at least this shows that there is some tension if you add matter and still require detailed balance. Now, all of the above arguments are generalizable and in several ways. One is to consider a nonlinear potential, and another is to consider different coupling, and also other pseudo-differential terms. But again, you still meet some problems and the possibility of severe fine tuning. Now, there are other arguments that lead to the more or less the same direction, which is to say that detailed balance might be abandoned. So, as far as I see it, the theory might have three potential problems: the predictability, the scalar mode, and the detailed balance problem. After these 2 days, I'm no longer sure whether one can really solve all of them separately, but let's assume so for the time being. But it seems that actually the hardest to accommodate is the scalar problem. Detailed balance, well, if you just drop it off, then it's no longer a problem, although this solution might not be desirable, because then the quantum theory might be harder to study. And as long as LHC won't find the Higgs, I like to entertain myself with the idea that I could consider a theory in the projectable version, where I have no problem of algebras, but I have not even any fundamental scalar field. And this way, I would have a quantum theory which is might be more tractable. However, other problems would remain, for instance, the scalar mode problem, and also the problem of what is the metric content of the theory. There are two directions which to me seem most urgent. The first is the issue of Lorentz violation. And by three-level arguments, this theory seems to be all right as far as observations are concerned. However, there is a general argument by Collins, according to which theories which are not Lorentz invariant in the ultraviolet will break Lorentz invariance at the loop level. And the level of this breaking will be order percent, so totally unacceptable from the point of view of observation. This issue has been recently confirmed by Yango Marco collaborators for Lipschitz scalar theories. I hope Marco will tell us something more about the subject. And so this might be actually the most serious problem to address. Now, on a positive note, and then I will conclude, there is an intriguing evidence that that this type of theory may display a fractal structure. So there are several models or theories of quantum gravity pointing towards the same direction, which is to say that in the ultraviolet, nature actually effectively sees only two dimensions. And this is nicely explained, shown by looking at the spectral dimension of the theory, which coincides with that of causal dynamical triangulations, quantum unseen gravity, and spin foams. I would say that it does not coincide with the result of from the quantum cosmology, but maybe Leonardo can put something on this subject. Now, the point is that with an isotropic scaling, the Newtonian potential at small scales will be different. And in general, this is actually typical of fractal manifolds, this type of different scaling behavior. Now, if for a moment assume that you live actually on a fractal manifold and not on a smooth manifold, when you consider integrals on a fractal, these can be approximated by fractional integrals. And I don't think this is true for any fractal, just for actually two huge classes of fractals, which is self-similar fractals and cookie-cutter sets. For instance, the Cantor set is a type of cookie-cutter set. But anyway, it might be actually natural to consider fractional integrals over a space a refraction Hausdorff dimension. Now, still these type actions actually admit a neat geometrical and maybe also physical interpretation of this, which ties in with anisotropic properties. And this was shown first by Bullock and then taken over by Pavlyubny. Before going to Ojala-Lipschitz gravity, I just remind you what is a fractional integral. So the, one of the earliest definitions is the left-sided Riemann-Liouville fractional integral, which is the following, where alpha is in general a complex number, and the t is the boundary value of time tau. So I'm considering just a one-dimensional model. This can be written as a Riemann-Stieltjes integral, where the measure now is of this form, and has the property of scaling in a way which is alpha dependent. Now, so one might start to see that anisotropic scaling might be natural actually in this type of integrals, which are actually can be generalized to Lebesgue type integrals. And they do have a geometrical interpretation. So consider a curve which is which lies in the tau g and f volume, and consider its consider the shadow that this fence projects over the GF plane and the F tau plane. Now, in the F tau plane, the shadow is nothing but the area under is just the natural interpretation as the area under the curve F. So the so we are looking at an ordinary integral, and so if you consider, for instance, a particle, a non-relativistic particle like a car. Then you will measure time, so clocks will measure time tau, and you will have a usual operational definition of the distance as an integration of the speed of a car in a given time interval. But if you look at the other shadow of a fence, now you will actually, that will correspond to precisely the fractional integral with alpha in general not equal to 1. When alpha is equal to 1, the two definitions, of course, coincide. But here, the thing is that while the clocks will still measure tau, you will have also definition of an inhomogeneous time. And this integral will be the actual distance covered by this fractal car in the same time interval. Well, if you change the time interval, this will change also the relation between the measured and so-called cosmic time. And this is a feature which is expected in any local model. Now, going back to, so what does this have to do with a possible application to gravitational models. So in the usual proposal, we have evidence that, well, by construction, that the microphysics is very different because there is an effective fractal structural space-time in as much as the spectral dimension that a diffusing process sees at a different scale is not always four. And while at larger scales, one will recover 4D, 4D physics. However, one might see whether it's useful actually to trade the evidence for exotic spectral dimension with a model with an exotic Hausdorff dimension. So in general, these two dimensions will be different. And I believe there is a theorem showing that for a very broad class of fractals, the spectral dimension is not larger than the Hausdorff dimension. And so this would be actually conceptually different from what we've done before. So First, we had a smooth manifold and an isotropic scaling and a given Lagrangian density. But we could consider also another setting where we have a fractal manifold, isotropic scaling, and a covariant Lagrangian density. This should lead, again, to power counter normalizability. This would be actually also independent from detailed balance because we are touching a different ingredient of idea. And amusingly, it's actually suggested by detailed balance itself in different ways. One is that this fractional calculus actually has shown up as I showed you before. And also the fact that we are considering actually actions with a finite future boundary is also natural, can be also naturally recovered in relativistic theory. This was shown by Nishioka. But
well, basically, I mean that the three-dimensional action can be interpreted as the holographic projection of a 4D action on a boundary at a finite future boundary. That's what I mean. I'll show you this in the next slide, which is actually the last one. So if you do this step, then
of course one should have studied the quantum mechanics of actually the field theory of this model. But actually, this is a concrete definition of a universe with an intrinsic fractal structure. Now, the idea is to go from a Lifshitz scalar to a Lifshitz universe, where what I change is not the Lagrangian density, but actually the measure, which is now non-trivial. And coordinates are still isotropic, because now they scale in the same way. The action, Lagrangian density is fully covariant. But now, for instance, I can take the spatial part to be the usual, but time part of a measure to be actually still this measure. In this case, this corresponds to the case alpha equal to z. Now, this would imply that at both the UV and infrared fixed point, the above formula for a fractional integral would correspond to the usual Cauchy formula for repeating integration, because in that case, z would be just natural. The other possibility, and the scalar field would have the same dimensionality as precisely as a Lifshitz scalar. Now, the other possibility is that I do not touch the time part, but I take this action in the spatial sector. In that case, alpha is corresponds to 1 over z. And at the UV fixed point, we are really talking about a general fractional integration. On the other hand, the dimension of the scalar field would be rather similar, except with this factor of z at the denominator. Now, I would expect that these two formulations would be physically inequivalent, and that this formulation would be physically inequivalent with respect to the usual field. Just because here I'm not adding my action, actually, my Lagrangian density would be a modified. So this might be an interesting thing to look at, and I welcome your comments, and I will stop here.
Just one general comment about the detailed balance condition, which is similar to what I mentioned already yesterday, but some people weren't here. Even in the original papers last winter, I wasn't particularly attached to the condition of detailed balance as fundamental. the general prescription is once you identify the scalings of fields, then you want to write down the most generic attention compatible with the symmetries. And then, of course, if one is brave enough, one can try to calculate in that most general attention. It might be general difficult because of the large proliferation of couplings. So if you search for any random prescription that cuts down the number of independent couplings just to start the calculation. And the detailed balance seems like one possible mechanism that reduces the number of independent couplings. It wasn't supposed to be viewed as some fundamental physics principle which should be maintained if you want to, for example, compare to actual GR at distances. And I thought I was clear on that point even in the original papers, but maybe not sufficiently because many people took the different lines.
Well, perhaps I didn't explain myself well, but what I wanted to do here was an exercise. So at first, it was not clear to me what type, even at the level of classical solutions, what we could expect with and without the balance. So I first said, okay, let's seek to this condition and see what are the consequences. So in fact, I did say so in one of my slides that it's not at all necessary. But at first, there were some papers who said, okay, we don't care about the balance. Others said, okay, yeah, we just stick to the balance. But the question was, why should I take one formulation over the other? And I thought that looking at the metric sector might have been able to partially address this question. So this was just an exercise of just pushing the balance upon the model and see what are the consequences. And then, of course, one ends up with a model which is so complicated or problematic that it might be desirable to them. That was my point.
Actually, I do have a follow-up question for you. So in terms of renormalizability here, is there a possible difference? Because there was a paper by Orlando and Refford which said that if topologically massive gravity three dimensions is renormalizable, then perturbations with detailed balance is renormalizable.
That's always been the conjecture based on the analogy with stochastic quantization. And there we know examples of non-gravitational systems where the principle which was called quantum inheritance actually holds exactly the improvement for orders in perturbation theory. For example, for the animals, if you write down the corresponding 4 plus 1 dimensional theory with z equal to 2, it inherits exactly the same properties as somebody could pay for dimensionally angular. Of course, you have to perform one additional renormalization, that's the relationship between space and time. But other than that, you don't generate any new contract terms that would invalidate the detailed balance. And that has been proven for non-gravitational systems. For gravity, there is no formal proof. But the conjecture is that if the topologically massive dimension in three dimensions leads to a normalizable theory, then presumably, by analogy, with the gauge symmetry, Yang-Mills, the same statement should be true even for theories with diffeomorphism. It hasn't been proven.
But what's known about general renormalizability if you give up detailed balance?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you give up detailed balance, then of course it's still far from being renormalizable, and you have many, many couplings. And in principle, you want to prove that there are fixed points. If you look at the renormalization, you want to be, for example, proving whether the theory might have a chance to be a symbolic tree when you put all these many different couplings. And there is a handful of classically marginal couplings. So the beta function, unlike in the case of Yang-Mills, you wouldn't be calculating just one running of one coupling, you would be calculating the running of 4 or 5 different coupling clusters. Especially if you include this little lambda as another dimensionless coupling, that's another object that should run. So that sounds like an extremely difficult calculation. It would be an extremely difficult calculation for me. So I was trying to reduce the number of marginal couplings. Detailed balance at the level of marginal couplings might be very practical because otherwise I don't see how we can actually practically calculate a better function as it depends on all these dimensional coupling classes.
Just a comment from what you said. I mean, that's true, but even with different balance, the issue of the UV freedom of the couplings remains. Just to make it clear, because maybe it was not clear.
That's absolutely true. That if the So the one issue is renormalizability, and the other issue is whether or not the theory will be complete. So if topologically massive gravity turns out to be asymptotically free, or if it ends up being exactly marginal in terms of coupling not running, then you then have the same property in the 2+1 dimensional theoretical balance. And there might actually be, for topological gravity, there's a subtle difference because it doesn't, it's not sufficient to just look at conventional topological massive gravity in 2+1 dimensions. Because that's not what we are using here as the seed action. The seed action is actually the Euclidean signature. Usually that doesn't make too much difference, but here it actually might make a lot of difference because you're taking a different real slice, real definition of the action in 3 dimensions. In other words, the 3-dimensional action is really Euclidean gravity. It never gets bicrotated to 2+1 dimensions. In particular, if you think of it naively as a sort of transcendence theory, then the Lorentz group is strictly SO3. It's not the Lorentz group, it's the Euclidean group. And of course, SO3 would have non-trivial fundamental, non-trivial multiple groups that would quantize the corresponding transcendence coupling constant. So if the coupling constant is quantized for topological reasons, it cannot run. And that would be an indication that the theory of 3+1 dimensions might be even better than symbolic free. There might be a line. This is all conjectural, and it needs to be gone through with actual calculation.
So I think you break the coupling and it's